This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinion expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Critics say we should be watching these movies.
But we're here to see if they're right.
Join us as we take a cinematic journey through independent and classic film.
So dim the lights.
And get ready for the show.
This is Art House Legends Podcast, where high art and geek culture collide. Welcome to the podcast that is worth $85,000. This is the movie Theater, Eric, and along with me are...
Yep, this is Kent, and holiday season is so busy, I've had to take a quick jump. Oh, hold on a second. Rare Sports Helpline. Yes, please keep alcohol 100 meters away from your purchase at all times. Thank you. Oh, sorry about that. Busy.
Hey, this is Chris, and watch your mouth. It's Christmas time, so let's act like it.
In this episode, we're discussing Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale, starring Oni Tomila, Jorma Tomila, Tommy Corpella, Rauno Juvonen, Per Christian Ellefsen, Ilmari Jarvinpaa, directed by Jamari Helander. Gentlemen, welcome to the holiday episode for 2017. Now, we could be doing Love Actually, we could be doing Gremlins, but no, we're going to Finland for our Christmas movie.
Hey, they just celebrated an anniversary of their existence as a nation, so...
Really? Yeah, please enlighten us.
I'd have to look up which anniversary that... I want to say 100 years, but...
100 years of Finland? Are you sure it's only been 100 years?
Of the current nation of Finland. Let me double check here for their actual incorporation.
We're getting there, but not just yet.
Independence from Russia was on 6th December 1917.
Interesting.
So 6th December 2017 was the 100th anniversary of their complete independence.
Well, there you go. Out of curiosity, because I have an interesting story about how I came across this movie, but how were you made aware of this movie? And I want to start with you, Ken. I'm curious. Did you know about this movie prior to us deciding to do it for this podcast?
I never heard of it. So.
What about you, Chris?
I've heard of it, and I've been wanting to see it for years. Alamo Drafthouse has had screenings pretty constantly the past couple of years, and I've always wanted to go, I've always wanted to see it, so it was time. So
All right, so the first time I heard about this movie was when I was perusing, as I usually did about 7 or 8 years ago. I would peruse the Roger Ebert reviews every Friday, you know, when he put out his new ones. And I came across this one called Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale, that was given 3.5 stars. And when I saw this, I was like, okay, that's an interesting title. Why on earth would he give this 3.5 stars? So I checked on it, and in Roger Ebert's words, I'm not pulling up the review because I'm lazy right now, but he called this the craziest and wildest Christmas movie he had ever seen. And that was enough to get me interested, but not enough to go race to a theater that would be probably about 15, 20 miles away from me. So I did what any normal person would do, which is wait until it hit a streaming service when streaming became a thing. So it was Christmas Eve. I want to say it was 2013, I think. 2012, 2013. Okay. And I just happened to come across it, and I was kind of bored. And so I put it on, and I think I've told you about how there's a thing that happens when you're about to go to sleep, but you're not exactly asleep, but you're not exactly awake. I was in that kind of state when I was watching this movie, and I bolted up right around the hour mark of this film. And this is an hour 20 minute film, and I like cheered at the end of this movie. All in my little apartment, all by myself. I absolutely cannot say enough great things about this movie. but or at that time. Now, I'm coming back to it. It's been probably about 3 years since I've seen it last. And yeah, I'm really eager to get into this particular movie. But I guess at this point, let's go ahead and let's talk, because it's been a while since we've talked about a film from the Scandinavian, Swedish, I think our last one was Seventh Seal, when we were talking about Bergman. Out of curiosity, Chris, what is your exposure to Northern Europe film?
I've seen some. I wasn't prepared, and I don't have any titles available offhand. But I know I've
a Bergman fan. Dove I take
into
it, huh?
Some of it. What's that?
A Bergman fan. I take it.
Maybe. I'm not sure offhand.
Okay. Lars von Trier.
I've seen most of his stuff. He's eh.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to put it. But Kent, this is, you know, you're now getting to be old hat when it comes to Northern European films. We talked about the Celebration. We've talked about Russian Ark. We've talked about the Seventh Seal. How did that prepare you for Rare Exports, or did it prepare you at all?
I was trying to come in completely unprepared, and the problem is I had my own expectation, and so I came in more for Western expectation and went, wait, no, that wasn't right at the end of it, and watched it again before recording tonight, and like, okay, this looks better. So it doesn't fit with our traditional Western stereotypes of what a genre film should be. I half expected a horror film. Didn't get that, which was cool. Comedy, not really laugh out loud, but I could see ironic moments, so okay. And, we'll get into the rest of it.
I'm just going to say this right now. I laugh my ass off on this movie.
Really?
This is funny. This is scary. This is, I mentioned Gremlins earlier. Believe it or not, just before I saw Rare Exports for this podcast, I was actually watching Gremlins. Just before this. And one thing that really impresses me is that there's actually a tradition of horror comedy Christmas movies. There's actually quite a few out there. In fact, you can even go so far as to say, like, have either of you seen Black Christmas, the original, not the really bad remake?
I've seen both.
Like I've heard of it.
Oh, come on. The original is, I mean, it's meant to be entirely a scary movie, but it's done by Bob Clark, the same guy who gave us A Christmas Story. All right. And so there is this kind of weird, this weird kind of goofiness about it. And it's one that Bob Clark knows that he's giving. But I mean, you could even go so far as to say, like Silent Night, Deadly Night is kind of weirdly funny, or at least Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. You gotta admit, it is more entertainingly bad. But yeah, I mean, Krampus we had a couple of years ago. This is the thing, right? And I think it's kind of the, you know, juxtaposing the festive holiday spirit with something terrifying, something creepy, something that, you know, kind of like being in a warm, you know, in a warm, happy place and having it taken away from you, right?
I meant happy place.
Okay. Oh, we're going to take that away from you. Or we're going to take it away now.
Hmm.
All right. So, let's go ahead and let's talk about this particular film. As the film starts us off, and we get kind of a prologue. We are on this mountain. We have mining company that's, you know, blowing shit up and trying to get something out of the ground, right? And they're speaking in English, which every time that I've seen this film, it still kind of startles me. I've seen it now, I think, 3 times, and I still am surprised when English starts the film off, because I'm expecting it to be Finnish. But what did you take of this introduction?
That was kind of weird for me, too, because I mean, it's selected, watch it on Amazon, and it's selected as, oh, with subtitles. I'm like, wait, English? Wait, no?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sort of makes sense within a certain context of...
Do you find yourself fearing that it's a dubbed version?
But
just a little bit?
a little, but it's matching up too well, so it's like, no, that's natural. Okay.
What about you, Chris? Yeah. What the introduction itself, the way that it sets up the characters, the wood shavings, the English. What do you take of all this?
I was kind of excited. It was in English. I was like, oh fuck, English, you know. And it's like, you know, and I have subtitles on usually anyway because. What I hear isn't always
people.
What.
Okay,
I've come to appreciate subtitles over the years. I mean, I guess I'm already like preparing to be old or whatever, but I don't know. yeah, but I mean, I like the introduction. It kind of pulls you in, and you're just kind of like, "Oh, what the fuck?" And then it's just like fucking wood shavings, you know, and giant ice cubes, and fucking, you know, it was cool. I liked it. Pulled me in right away, basically.
Well, one thing I like is how it sets us up with these scientists, and then we are introduced to the two boys. One is our protagonist, Petari. I'm going to call him Peter just because, you know, American.
Yeah.
And we have Jusso, which I'm just going to say Jusso because why not? But Peter and Jusso are these two boys. Kind of are they're watching this happen. They're behind boxes of dynamite, which is a little foreshadowing. And at the same time, though, it also sets us up for who our main protagonists are. And I gotta admit, the movie, like I said, it's about 80 minutes long. It's a very short movie, but it moves at a breakneck speed through all the details. And it makes sure that it goes, okay, we set this information up. Okay, let's move to the next information. Set that up. Let's move on. It doesn't just waste time, right? Every scene that you get is important to understand how we get to the ending that we get to. And especially the relationship between these two boys, considering that, if I'm not correct, they only have one more scene together, and that's it. That Peter...
Yeah, before he's taken.
Yeah. For the most part, Peter is on his own. He is dealing with this fight on his own. And in a way, the way that they stage these two boys, you expect that the main protagonist is going to be Jusso, not Peter, right?
I don't know.
Jusso's so a dick. I don't know. For me, though, the thing is when you see a very bombastic, asshole-ish character, and then you have kind of a quiet, meekish character, the meekish character is basically going to be the fodder. So the asshole gets, you know, feels, you know, that he needs redemption, needs atonement, right? And especially considering that the way that they're staged, Jusso is on the left, Peter is on the right. And visually speaking, it's an indicator that your eyes go directly to the left when it comes to, you know, when it comes to film. So that particular character is given more importance than the character on the right. It's a misdirection of sorts, right?
Yeah.
All right, but
no. For some reason, I was just thought it was going to be either the two of them or
you thought that it was going to be the two of them against Peter. The world kind of thing.
That or I could have seen Peter that. And Dad.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh, when Peter is okay, I'm just going to go ahead and put this out here. Peter's a badass. Sorry, let's just get that right out of the way. Peter is a genuine badass. When he grows up, he's going to be Kurt motherfucking Russell. All right, I'm talking about like McCreary motherfucking Kurt Russell. Come on, you know like, that he's going to look a lot like Kurt Russell when he gets older, especially when he gets that big ass beard. Tell me I'm wrong.
So this is Escape from New York Kurt Russell?
No, the thing, McCreary.
Oh, the thing Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah. Because I was getting Thing vibes like the whole time, which was awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. There is a lot of the Thing going on here. Especially the lighting. They use a lot of the lighting cues from the Thing. I'm pretty sure that if you were to talk to the filmmaker, he would reference the Thing quite a bit. But seriously though, I mean, this kid, he is a badass. You know, and the funny thing is that he starts off as meek. He starts off as quiet. I mean, the first things that we actually see him actually doing is what? Reading books. You know?
Nerd.
Yeah, he's a fucking nerd.
Well, he's researching the monster, which is known as Santa.
Well, what I love is how it's set up, because Jusso says, basically dispels the whole Santa theory, you know, the whole Santa element to Peter. Peter is like, oh, wow, I didn't even think about that. So he goes and he researches, right? He, you know, it isn't that he's going to take Jusso's word for it. No, he needs the hard data. And so he pours over, what, hundreds of books? He must have gone through his library like, you know, like a whirlwind, right?
And then he desecrates them all by ripping out all the pages.
Hey, badasses don't...
Research.
No, that's what badasses do. They rip out the pages.
They rip them.
Well, you think McCreary respected library rules? Hell no.
Yeah, but McCreary didn't, like, run around without any pants on in the fucking cold, man.
No, that's hardcore. Let me put it this way. Peter is fucking hardcore from minute one. He is a hardcore motherfucker. He goes around with no pants in the middle of the fucking cold. He will put bear traps in fucking fucking chimneys. The kid wields a weapon like it's nobody's business. Orders people around like he's a fucking general. I mean, this kid is like hardcore.
Brings the weapon to eat fucking gingerbread cookies.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he's here to eat gingerbread and kick ass, and he's all out of gingerbread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said that. Got a problem.
It's plenty of gingerbread. It would just make more.
And I'm going to keep making John Carpenter references because I can. But seriously, though, Peter is like, you know, I mean, he starts off as meek and quiet, but... You know, it's like as soon as he knows what he's dealing with, you know, he is not afraid to buck the man. He's not afraid to buck the police. He's not afraid to go against the authority because he knows that he's right. And again, it's this little kid who's talking to his teddy bear. You know, he's got a rifle in one hand, a teddy bear in the other. I mean, that image on its own is worth its weight in gold, right?
Treats that thing like a fucking dog too. It's amazing.
I love it. I absolutely love what he does, and I love the fact that he's prepared for war. I mean, he puts on a helmet, he gets pads. He's, you know, he's treating this like a serious threat. He's not like goonying this thing. You know, he's expecting to go to combat.
Well, fair. If anything else, he's expected to go hunting.
Do you normally wear a helmet to go hunt? Normally, hunters think that they're in a position of authority over what they're hunting. You don't really see...
Well, in this weather, you need some sort of hat, so...
Well, but you don't need a hockey helmet. And considering that what we see with the old man at the end of the movie, he needs that helmet!
Yeah.
Like I said, this kid is ready. I mean, and I love the fact that, you know, the way that he's treated... is what you expect adults to treat a child. It's so we kind of expect how this is happening, but at the same time, though, he's also a little cocksure. He's wrong about Santa the first time, right? You know, it's the second act reveal, right? Is that we have this elf? He thinks that it's Santa, so they're going to try to sell Santa to the rich guy, and dun dun dun, it's not Santa. It's Santa's elves. And that introduces us to a lot of elf dom. Oh,
come on.
Nobody prepared me for the amount of, like, unwashed, naked hobo dick this movie was
going to
fucking have.
Part of me wants to know what the casting call was like for the naked Santa's elves. I mean, did they lure them in and say, wanted, Santa's elves need to have older gentlemen such and such of a certain weight. And then the first thing that they do is as soon as they come into the audition, all right, take off your clothes.
Run naked in a freezer. I'll tell you about the part.
That's the part that's difficult. The cold that had to have been going on at the time.
I'm really hoping that it's CG because that is a lot of shrinkage there.
I don't think
some
they
of it
did
was.
Any CG.
I thought some
no,
was
no,
like they're
CG,
in the helicopter.
There's definite CG, and it's gloriously bad CG. I mean, just okay. When you have a movie like this, I don't want perfect CG. If you're doing perfect CG, you're putting way too much attention to detail. I want it to look a little cheesy. I want it to look a little goofy. I want to have that spell of kind of B movie to this movie, right? You kind of want this to be a throwback. Just a little bit, right? Come on.
to the hobo dicks you saw in the past, or
not the hobo dicks. I'm talking about the CG, like the helicopters and the explosion. Which, okay, that's a pretty awesome explosion. Okay. Can we all admit to that?
Oh yeah,
that was a Michael Bay suck my dick moment. Actually, maybe I shouldn't say that in this movie.
Michael Bay explosion.
Oh, Michael Bay wishes he could have had an explosion like that. Even now, he wishes he had an explosion like that. That was a thing of beauty. Another thing of beauty we have to talk about, the beards. These are some grade A motherfucking beards.
Well, it's cold, and, you know, why bother shaving when you can warm your face with a beard?
But my question is, who has the best beard?
Having that beard chopping up a fucking pig is probably pretty fucking gross, though, with, like, everything.
Yeah.
Come on. See,
it's awesome, but at the same time, it's like you're going to be picking that shit out for, like, weeks.
It's totally worth it. Absolutely totally worth it.
Well, you see, they're all also trying to be extras on Game of Thrones, so... When I first saw Jormel Tamila in this, I thought he was one of the guys who came for Hulk for a second. His resemblance, go on.
I don't know about that. But I'm not following you on that one. Not following you.
Okay.
But out of curiosity, though, what was your favorite beard out of all of them?
What?
Because I have a favorite of mine, but...
Wait, favorite beard? But there were no women in this movie. Oh, wait.
Okay.
Did you notice that? There's not a single... I mean, there's an implication that maybe the mother's dead.
Well, okay, so...
But
if we're talking about
there's nothing given.
The mother of the main protagonist.
Yeah,
you get the sense that she had died, like, sometime that year. That this is their first Christmas without her. Also, another thing that... I don't want to go straight away from the beards, but the family dynamic between the father and the son is really powerful, because you get the sense that this relationship has been strained since the mother's death. That this boy is having a lot of his preconceptions being destroyed, especially, you know, with the he just had Santa removed. You know, his best friend basically broke him of that. And now he's realizing that Santa's a murderous psychopath, so there's that too. And on top of that, you know, their tribe's livelihood is being threatened by the destruction of reindeer, which he was largely at fault for. So he also has that guilt added to him. The father is worried for the safety of the tribe, as well as because of his own failings to be able to provide for his son, as well as the fact that he's having to deal with this child all by himself, and his child, to say the least, is a little odd compared to the other children.
He cannot listen to basic instruction, like, at all, ever.
Yeah.
Stay put.
He's a badass, and badasses don't listen to instructions.
You mean he's a child? Come on.
That's true. But seriously, though, I mean, the way that the film sets up this relationship and the scene, especially that scene before on Christmas Eve, you know, where, you know, Peter's eating the gingerbread and there's this strained thing happening between him and his father. Not really talking, but it's what they're not saying that's kind of the important parts, right? And I don't know, it's just, the scene is just so well done. And it gets across everything that we need to know about this relationship, because the next day, all hell's about to break loose, right? I mean, this is kind of like an alien invasion type movie in that sense, right? Like one day, the world is, you know, the world is not, you know, it's, you know, kind of okay. The next day, everything changes. There's the status quo has been disrupted, right? And that's when we get our elf on a stick, and our all the radiators are missing. Hair dryer is missing. I love that callback when we get to the hair dryer, especially the fact that he basically puts in his pants like a gun. I was kind of hoping that there would be a that would play a part in the end of the movie, Like, when they're about to blow everything up, it's like he pulls out the hairdryer and that's what does it. Oh, come on. That's a Chekhov's hairdryer if there ever was one, right? Yes, I said I'll stand by it, too. But what did you take?
I'm still trying to decide on a favorite beard, so, you know.
Yeah.
It's a dilemma, so.
There's so many dilemmas in this movie. They're all great dilemmas. I mean, I'm full of Christmas cheer talking about this movie. I guess you could tell I'm probably going to stay over the moon when we get to that particular part of this conversation. But come on, seriously, though. Right? I mean, if there's any problems that you're having with the movie, please, let's go with that. Because I'm going to just kind of be giddy over this movie for the rest of this talk. So try to break it. Break my heart.
I felt like it was... Oh, go ahead.
I don't think I could break your heart. I don't think I'm as excited as you are, but...
Ditto.
Anyway.
Come on. Give me your best
shot. Can I say, just to irritate somebody else we all know, I do believe I like this movie more than A Christmas Story.
I do too. So.
Yeah. That should cause some heresy in ranks there.
I was going to say I felt like it was building towards something that it never really, I never felt like it like delivered. Plus, Santa is basically an ice cube with horns.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good move that we don't. He never really escapes.
They tease that he's like a mix between Santa and Krampus, though, and the Krampus lover in me wanted more Krampus.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was a bit let down in that aspect.
But, you know, CGI budget.
True. I mean, I understand why. I just, you know.
Plus, if you blow him up before he's released, then, you know.
Then you wouldn't have the explosion, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, explosions are easy. Krampus walking. Rawr, eat. Plus, none of the kids actually dies. No children actually die in this film. It's adults get torn apart left and right off camera, but...
Was there a no reindeers were harmed in the making of this film at the end of it? Because I forgot to check.
I didn't check either. I don't know if there was. Oh, shit.
Seems like it should be.
Well, I don't know if Finland has those same rules that... the U.S. does with don't harm animals, like, well, who knows?
But we totally fucked up those pigs. Fuck it.
Yeah. where were we? Oh, so, do we want to go back to the beard?
We never picked a favorite beard, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick the dad, I think. I think he had the best beard. Best groomed beard.
I want to pick the pilot.
Yeah, I was torn between his as well. He's just a little more... There's layers to that one.
Yeah. They're all good beards, but...
And I kind of like the beard of the first helper or whatever, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
naked ones, they can keep those. So.
And for the record, the pilot's beard is my favorite.
Okay.
Just nice. Just got to put it out there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that looks the most like McCreary. Although the other friend, the neighbor, he does...
Amo or whatever?
Amo, I think is his name. Finding Amo.
Yeah. Finding Amo, yeah.
No, I will have to agree with my girlfriend on this. His beard was basically Willem Dafoe's from The Life Aquatic. She's absolutely right on that one. Absolutely right.
That's scary.
I like how his English was like wrong, but like just right, so you understood what the fuck he was trying to say.
Absolutely. It was awesome. I want it to be perfect.
Yeah.
Seriously. I also love how how especially when they were like setting up the whole the corral, the electrified corral. And just how happy they were considering that they're in, you know, like water, you know, snow, and any snow would probably short out that electrified fence like over. But yeah,
well, it's something that I think is I mean, we've got electrified fences here, and we have snow that comes up to them, so it's somehow there's they know how to do it. So. Yeah.
And also to discuss the issue that you said about not having a cramp, you know, that Santa doesn't show up. Santa is the ticking time clock. The villain, he's the Sauron, so to say. So it's kind of the way I take it is, yeah, you don't want to see Santa. And I love the fact that what you do get is you get the big horns. The horns are what sells you about the size of the Santa. And also I love the fact that the villagers dehorn Santa before blowing him up. You know, that just seems like a Viking thing to do, just a little bit.
I was just surprised that, what was it, 196 naked dicks are worth $16,800,000?
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus, like, 20% interest or something?
They're all Santa.
Yeah.
Which is...
Santa dick is worth a lot, I guess.
It's a little more... disturbing to me that they're basically taking these guys and selling them into slavery.
Well, as my girlfriend was quick to remind me, do we know if they're even human? Let's be honest here. They've been working for an entity that's at least a few thousand years old.
Yeah.
And as someone also mentioned, we don't see a whole lot of women in this, so how would they procreate if they were descendants?
Kidnapping, I just thought they wanted keeping to... in their caves, breeding, and then...
But we never see a village of them. We never see...
Right,
And they seem to come out of the woods. So, I don't know. I'm willing to kind of go with the fact that if they are Santa's elves, you know, restocking Santa's shelves, that more than likely they are superhuman. I'm willing to grant the movie this. Simply just because... Well, when an old American says so, you know, we should believe it, right?
It's kind of like how in American cinema, if an old British guy says it, we should believe it.
Why not? That's how I say it. That's how we should always believe it. It's like if a Brit says anything, we should just automatically believe it. I mean, it worked well for Star Wars.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, but.
I was going to say, it reminded me of, and it's a movie that came out the same year, a Norwegian movie called Troll Hunter.
Believe it or not, I have not yet seen that. It's on my Netflix queue. It's been on my Netflix queue for like 5 years. I still have not seen it.
It would be a really good double feature with this. So, yeah.
Well, I know, I intend to see it.
Definitely worth checking out.
I've heard nothing but good stuff about it, but it's just one of those things, like, I always find myself, like, finding something else to watch. I'm gonna get around to it. My Netflix queue is backed up by like 20 years.
Oh yeah, me too. I've got like 80 things in there. So.
Seriously, but just 80. Huh. All right, how cute. but anyway, but seriously, I mean, it, especially considering how the movie it sets up the action, it sets up the tension the way it does. And most of the payoff takes place in about 25 minutes. I mean, it's roughly around the 50-minute mark that we have the elves basically attacking our protagonists, right? And it's up to little Peter to rally the troops, lead them like a motherfucking General fucking Patton. I mean, you know, and he's taking the head. I mean, he's taking the lead on this. It isn't like he's leading from behind. Hell no. He's grabbing hold of the rope and leading the charge. Seriously, he's...
I like how he's like, before he goes off in the helicopter, he's basically like, Dad, don't be a pussy. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hell, like, you know, like, oh, we need to open the gates. I'll fucking do it. I mean, you know, he
was going to sacrifice himself to a bunch of dicks, man, for the greater good.
Oh shit! That is so going on the tagline. oh my god! No, but oh shit! No, I. Oh man! Anyway, but seriously, I mean, I even love the fact that, you know, when they're swinging the bad girls and boy. Okay, before we get into one of my favorite parts, another part that I absolutely love is when. Peter tries to shame his dad into spanking him. You know, like 15 likes should do. Just let's get this over with.
Okay.
I mean, it's these elements that are absolutely hilarious. I mean, especially as a father, Kent, you must have been laughing your ass off thinking, if only my child were this honest. Right? Come on. Come on.
If only my child would ask for a spanking every now and then.
if they do it now and then there's bigger trouble than you think.
Ooh.
Might have something to do with the movie we'll be talking about next year. Just saying. Anyway, but seriously, that is a genuinely funny scene. Please tell me, Kent, that you caught the humor in that sequence.
He was not amused, you can tell.
That might have been one of those points where the same point in the movie, dog sneaks up behind me and distracts me from the subtitles. So,
Dude. When's the last time a movie had fiddlesticks as part of its dialogue?
That I can remember, it's been a while. So
yeah, I love the fact that my favorite scene is when they're swinging the kids around in the net and you have Peter going, Yahoo!
Ew.
Oh, come on. That is like, I mean, hell, if I were him at that point, you know, I'd probably be pissing my pants, but I would hope that I would have the balls to scream Yahoo with a whole bunch of naked Santa's elves wanting to rip me apart.
What, did they really want to rip him apart, or did they want to shove him into a bag and present him to be ripped apart?
Does it really matter?
I don't think they harmed
sacrifice,
because you're already escaping and you know there's a plan to blow up Santa, so
honestly at this particular point I wonder if the elves are really going to care, because it's no longer about him being punished for his crime as much as it's now that they've really pissed them off. Right, you know, he's leading them on a chase as what, maybe 5-10 miles, maybe, you know, being very generous. They'd be probably pissed off at this point. They're probably not going to wait to tear him apart, wait for Santa to tear him apart, right? But I gotta admit though, Peter has some of the greatest 80s one-liners in this movie. Come on, you have to admit that they gave him the 80s one-liners. That's what I'm talking about. He is so much a MacReady. He is so fucking MacReady right here. Right? You know, it's like, you know, the one I'm thinking about is when he's talking about how, what's going to happen, you know, when Santa wakes up. It's like, let me see here. Oh, shit. Ah, damn, they don't have it anywhere. Damn it. Fuck IMDb.
I like how disgusted he was trying to explain, like, the whole Santa theory to Juuso after they find, like, the picture of the hole.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of like, oh, he's stupid? Look! You know, just like the look on his face and just, why aren't you getting this? That's when he first puts on, like, all the pads and shit.
Mm-hmm. I just, it's all these little elements. I think part of me also just kind of gets this, I know this sounds really weird, but it's a John Hughes vibe as well. I mean, this is about a kid facing responsibility for his actions. You know, not depending on someone else to deal with it, but to take it on head on, right? Becoming a man. That's really what he's doing here, right?
Well, once he set down that teddy bear, it was like that symbolized him, you know, fuck you, childhood, I'm a man now.
Although I think, didn't he keep the teddy bear? Or I'm trying to remember, like,
I thought he put it down before he went in the door that said 24. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He left it in the snow.
Yeah, well, he didn't want it to be torn apart. He knew that what was behind that door was dangerous. He was protecting his teddy bear.
Well, fuck.
Come on.
I did think that was weird. The door was 24, and also the advent calendar he refused to open was 24.
That's the thing I absolutely love. It's ridiculous, okay? Let's be honest here. It is ridiculous that the advent calendar and that door are coincide with one another. But at the same time, it's also symbolic, right? He's been fearing the 24th. You know, he's been fearing this door. He taped it. He stapled it. He is scared of this number. And what does he do? He goes in. He walks in. He faces that fear. And that's pretty awesome. How, you know, that you know, he's dealing with his own thing. He's also becoming a man and becoming responsible for, you know, his village and the people of his village. Remember that the people that the kids were taken, he's going to rescue them. This is a rescue mission, right? I mean, so
oh, yeah.
He's taking care of his village as well as taking care of himself and being responsible. I mean, this is, you know, this kind of has a John Hughes element in that sense, right? Of that kind of transition from childhood to man. Or maybe I'm thinking way too hard about this. It is absolutely possible.
Maybe, but I don't know.
Probably.
You might not be, though. So...
Now, out of curiosity, what did you make of the title, Rare Exports, prior to the ending of the film? Because that... I found myself, almost every time that I've seen this film, asking myself, why on earth would they name this movie that? This is so... You know, that is such a weird title.
Well, at first I thought it referred to the company at the beginning of the film, that since the American wants whatever's in there, that's to be exported. But also looking at IMDb, there was a short subject
there
these
is.
Guys did a few years ago that was...
Well, this was based off of that, this, so. Off of that short.
Yeah, which is, for looks like three guys go into the wilderness to hunt Santas. So, and export them. Like, okay. Kind of in the same vein that What We Do in the Shadows was originally a short subject.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hmm.
And then there, later on, there was a safety instruction video put out. So,
I really
want to see that instruction video. No,
now that you said that, now I do too.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I've seen it before. I think after
oh,
I saw
really?
It the first time, I went looking for anything I could about this movie, and I think I came across that. I can't remember.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure if I've seen it again, I would probably remember it.
Okay.
But another question I found myself asking, what time period was this movie set in?
Hmm.
Because we're not seeing, you know, state-of-the-art technology from 2010 in this movie.
Well, the location doesn't help either.
Well, the location doesn't
it's
help.
Like,
but
yeah,
we do...
Indeed.
But we do have Americans and American technology at this base as well, and they would have state-of-the-art computers. They would have state-of-the-art tech.
Well, they might not in a dig site.
I mean...
They might just have some basic laptops. I'm thinking sometime in the 90s, because they're referring to Russia and not the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking between the fall of communism and, you know, cell phones being everywhere. So,
in fact, do we even see cell phones?
I don't think we see one.
No.
In fact, all the communiques are radio,
walkie-talkie.
CB. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd probably put it like mid to late 90s at best.
Yeah.
The technology goes there. We don't see. I think that's rough around that particular time. But you're also right, Chris. This particular part of the world, we're not going to see a whole lot of advanced technology, even by, you know, that day's standards. But I don't know. I think that lack of technology is one of the things that makes this and makes this movie work.
Yeah.
Because if you had the internet, although I have to admit though, it would have been a great punchline if you could order your Santa from a website, you know, rareexports.com. Come on, now that would be great viral marketing for the movie, right? You know, you can order your Santa through rareexports.com.
With or without clothing? Or?
Well, I think they go with clothing. They don't send them naked.
Yeah.
At the same time, though...
Although the clothes will be there, but, you know, whether he's wearing them or not, that's entirely a different story.
That was more information than I... Really well. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. That was a thing.
This is why I'm here. So.
Absolutely. All right, gentlemen, is there anything else we want to talk about with this movie before we go ahead and go to what I'm expecting to be a very short geek sheet?
How do you really teach these elves how to be Santas at the end?
Well, you see how they're trained to be Santas.
I mean,
Santas.
They're teaching them, but do they even speak? Can you even go, okay, kid, what do you want?
I mean, well, I don't think they're meant to. I think they're just meant to smile.
Okay. Smile, hold the kid, get a picture taken, pass it on.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
How did they have time to whip up those dolls before they stole the kids?
I think magic. They've been doing that for the last year.
Or centuries.
Yeah. Makes sense.
There you go.
Now, where do they carry them on their bodies? That's the odd thing. So,
because
you never see those guys holding like a bunch of dolls each, going.
Well, we don't actually see them running with the dolls. I mean, the thing is, they do it during in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm not. I don't know.
Yeah, you got nothing.
Yeah, I'm lost.
Let me do the shortest geek sheet of all time. I went through the cast list and I didn't recognize a single movie that might be familiar that on any of these. Closest is that a couple of people were in a movie with Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay, Big Game. All right. Have either of you
Big Game? That's about it.
No.
It's actually on streaming. It is the
the worst. It's an Air Force One, except bad.
It's awful, but it's deliciously awful. How do I put it that way? I mean, literally, think of it as Rare Exports, except that our hero is protecting the president. Yeah, is that movie. I can hear the dissatisfaction in the air. And it was actually directed by the director of this movie. So
written and directed by him.
And directed. Yeah. Both the boy and his father, which actually father and son. They also star in that game as well, or star in that movie as well with Sam Jackson, which I'm pretty sure he was drunk or stoned the entire time.
Yeah. Oh well.
Yep. All right, so anything else? Any other Geek Sheet elements?
That was about it.
There's not much going on there. I won't make you go further on that. All right, then let's call it. Kent, Chris, do you agree with the critics on Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale? Do you give it a pass? Do you give it a fail? Or do you give it a maybe? Kent?
You know, I think I'm going to go ahead and give this a pass, but base it on the approaching it kind of as a Christmas dark fairy tale instead of an actual horror movie. Or you seem to think it was funnier than I thought it was funny, but it's a little heartwarming how the father and son can put aside any differences and bond over, you know, blowing up Santa. But maybe that's the true meaning of Christmas, is bonding with your family to blow up Santa. So
there you go. I agree.
I could be onto something there, or I could be on some serious drugs, which I don't think I am right now. But I think everybody on this movie was on something. But it was quite an original idea, and yeah, so I'm gonna go with it, pass it, and be happy.
Chris.
I'm going to pass it too, but I didn't love it. I did like a lot of it, but I mean, I think I'll like it more with repeat viewings because I know what to expect from it. And one thing we didn't talk about, I did like the score despite it being pretty simple, but it was solid.
It was effective. And, it was an effective score.
Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty good, I think, on a first time viewing. So I'll give it a pass.
And I think I already made it very clear what I feel about this movie. It is a deliciously funny, not really scary, but kind of, it's a horror comedy type of mixture. It's fun, it's goofy, and especially considering that it feels like, it doesn't feel like a John Carpenter film in spirit, but that it's kind of giving an homage to John Carpenter quite a bit. And honestly, that's all I could ever ask from a horror comedy like this. And it's fun. It's funny. I can't tell you just how giddy I get just even just thinking about the film. When we brought it up to, you know, about doing this for our Christmas movie, I want to say that my heartbeat kind of raced a little bit because just thinking about watching the movie again just brought me joy. And that's the kind of thing that I want to share with others, and that I honestly firmly believe that this movie, as much as it has a cult following, doesn't have as strong a following as I think it deserves. This should be one of those movies that you go back to every year during the holiday season, on the same level as you would Gremlins or A Nightmare Before Christmas, even though I'm not a fan of that movie at all, or Gremlins either. But,
what?
Gremlins 1. Gremlins 1 I'm not a big fan of, but Gremlins 2 is fucking awesome. But I know I'm in the minority when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Oh, be careful. Be careful. Art House Rejects is coming up. Just reminding you. I will defend that shit. I'll defend it. I'll defend it. All right. But yes, it's a definite pass. But gentlemen, it is coming to the end of the year, and we have one more movie we have to do. And if we're going to make it the last movie of 2017, why not make it the most surprising movie of 2017? Chris, what is that movie?
Get Out! Sorry. Yeah, Get Out.
Yes. Jordan Peele's directorial debut came out in February and is being in close consideration. I would say it's a 90% chance it's going to get nominated for Best Picture. And there's a good chance it could actually even win. So we might actually be doing the Best Picture winner before it wins Best Picture. This could be a new. But anyway, please join us for our last show of 2017. And if you want to check out all of our other shows that we've done this year or years prior, you can go do so on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can go to our website at arthouselegends.com. And of course, if you want to talk to us, you can do so on Facebook, on our Facebook page, as well as Twitter at Arthouse Legends. Or if you just want to send us a little message, you can do so at arthouselegends@gmail.com, and we'll get to you as quickly as possible. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. This is the Movie Dude, Eric.
This is Kent.
And this is Chris.
And Fiend.